Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Marcia Casper Cook, and it is a sizzling hot romance. And actually, I'm Marcia Casper Cook, who is actually Madison M. Montgomery, and we'll talk about that later. We got a great show planned today, and we have a special co-host tonight, and Bennett Pomeroy.
Oh, is that
Hi,
what
Bennett.
I am now?
I think so. I labeled you. I don't know if that was a good idea or not. But anyway, here's Bennett. Hi, Bennett.
Well, hi there. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm Bennett Pomeranz, the host of Anything Goes, and I have a piece of my mind on Night Owl, Amazon, Audio World, A Fair Decor, A Piece of the Page, To Be or What. I don't do anything. I'm lazy.
The show's only an hour and a half.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure. You know, I got to get in my promotional
ends. Yeah, I know. All right, I'm Marcia Casper Cook, who we'll talk about what I do later, which I never talk about, but we will. We're going to have a really fun show today. We have two fun, real fun guests. We have Susanna C. Ryan, and we also have Delina Silverfox. And we have Susanna, who is from Rebel Ink Press, and we have Delina, who is from Naughty Nights. And these are two of the favorites of mine of the romance. The owners have been on, and we've had great times, and their authors are always welcome on. And Bennett has had them on, too, and so we're...
I've had them on Anything Goes a lot of times.
See, Bennett,
and I have to tell Ms. Ryan something before I forget, because...
Go ahead.
She did. She was on a show with me, and I had talked to Leanne Sodahye Murphy, and I said, Leanne, if you ever write a vampire novel, I will write the foreword. Well, about 2 weeks later, Leanne says to me, she says, Bennett, when are you writing the foreword? The book will be out in November.
I love her.
So I wanted to tell you, Suzanne, fairy tales do come true. And it is coming with my foreword.
I got to talk to her, okay?
You were a witness on that show, and you guys can listen to the archives. She was a witness on that show.
You know, when I'm listening to the show, I'm trying to keep, it keeps knocking me off, on and off. So then I have to end up listening to your show sometimes afterwards because I don't know what happens. But I like to call in sometimes, but then if I call in, then you have to answer it and tell me you're not going to put me on, which is fine. I don't want to go on.
Well,
so
if I knew that somebody's coming on, I would surely let them on. But
no,
if
well,
I get a mysterious number I don't know offhand while I'm on the show, I'm like, no.
I know. Well,
I sometimes get six calls.
Yep.
And I want to talk to Elizabeth Black, or I want to talk to Cassandra Dane, or I want to talk to Barbara Watkins, or
no, I don't.
Whoever
really,
I may have, and it's like, if I don't know the person, I don't know who they are. They may be a stalker. They may be somebody great.
Well,
I don't know.
Virginia and I had that one time, and both of us we just didn't even talk. We just were trying to listen, and he said some really bad things. And we're going like, okay, we were just stunned. And so then we got him off, but it was weird because we didn't expect it, and we were just kind of sitting there thinking like, what happened here? And anyway, let me introduce our two guests, which Susanna C. Ryan and Delina Silverfox. And Delina, how are you? Let's hear from you first. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Marcia?
I'm good. Why don't you tell everybody who you are and just a little bit about yourself, so then we'll talk after we talk to Susanna.
Okay, thank you for having me here.
You're welcome.
I am right now located in Indianapolis. I lived for about a dozen years in Portland, Oregon, so it's been a little bit of a little culture shock there, but getting a lot of my writing done. I'm finishing up my degree in November, so that's pretty exciting. I'm finally going to have a little bit more time for my writing. I do mainly historical romance, but I'm starting to, for some strange reason, I'm getting into paranormal, and it's funny because I've never had any real draw towards the paranormal except for, like, my D&D games and werewolves and things like that. But all of a sudden, it's like all these stories are coming. They're all paranormal. So people look out for those.
Right. We never know what comes in our little brains here. We go,
well, I know,
we can
right?
never, let's go this way. You can never say never in this field. Because I've said that. Okay, Susanna, I've seen you and all over the place online, and I've heard you on Reddit, and I feel like I know you. I actually do know you now because I talked to you a few minutes ago, but other than that, I haven't really had you on. So I'm so glad to have you on, and tell us about yourself.
Well, first, thank you, Marcia. I'm
sure.
really glad to be on. I'm
sure.
an author with Rebel Ink Press. I've been with them for over 2 years. I have over 20 releases. I do mostly paranormal, but every so often you'll see a contemporary come through, okay?
And she read the mean vampire book.
I have two. One's out right now, Chains of Lust After Dark, okay?
I understand that. You sent me one, and I was like, yeah, my computer still needs to get the cigarettes out of them.
This one is a vampire. Takes place in 1888. London, where Jack the Ripper is running amok, killing prostitutes, and he's a master of BDSM, and he's a vampire. It goes so well together, okay?
Yeah. That probably does.
And before he was dead, that's what he was. He was a master anyway, a master dom, so he just carried it over. It's my first one where I've written with that genre. So I was kind of excited with this one. And the next one coming out in another month is another vampire, another gothic one, but it takes place in about two or three different times. It was tough to write it because it was going back and forth. And even my editor said, "What are you doing?" So we had to add like 3,500 words to it because it was just that difficult to write, but I think we finally got it down. And it does travel through time, these souls. So it was pretty cool. And I'm hoping that one's going to go over big. It's just different. So
Delina, Delina is going to get into that market. Is that what you said, Delina? You're going to delve into
the paranormal? I mean, it's huge. But you know what I'm finding is really big? Shapeshifting. They love... It's huge.
Yes, they.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
There's so much
shifting.
Science fiction nowadays. They love it.
Yeah, and I'm not talking wolves. They can shift into anything. Okay, goats,
yes.
Lambs, bears. Doesn't matter. They just love that genre. They really do. And I'm finding that I need to write something. I need to think of what I'd like to turn into. That's how I write things, you know. I'm usually there, so.
Well, I think that's what we all have to do, kind of. You know, sometimes you have to be in the moment. And when you get out of the
get
moment.
You
got to
get into.
Yeah, you got to get into.
You know, if I'm going to be a bird, I'm not sure which kind I'm going to be.
A hot bird. I don't.
There you go, Bennett. You got it, okay.
Thank you. I remember you'll pay me later for that one.
Right. Has anybody done prehistoric birds? How
no.
about a pterodactyl?
Yes, I know a very good friend who's done prehistoric birds.
Really? Just
nothing
really
BDSM, but yeah, prehistoric birds, yes.
You have, like a you have to have a dictionary to understand all this. To go like, okay, what are we doing now? Because, you know, I mean, everything's changing so fast, you know, as far as genres go, you know, which is, you know, kind of difficult. And sometimes to put yourself in a certain genre and hope it's in the right one. But I think because that's what's happened lately, there's so many different kinds, and sometimes they're not listed in the way that you think they should be, and it can cost the author time and money trying to get it together, trying to figure out what they're in. Because
and mine are really erotic, but they're not as erotic as some of the ones I've read, and I thought I was erotic.
Yeah.
You know, it can get even... I'm pretty mild, I find.
Also. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I thought I pushed my limit for myself, but then I think to myself, no. But see, then what happens is I'm thinking like, well, maybe I'm wrong because you get so much into it, you go like, well, that's not so bad, but or the words aren't whatever, and then you realize, well, no, they're not what everybody, some people really get offended by that, and which is why on my shows, do we have, I think I have an echo now. Do you hear an echo?
Yeah, I hear an echo.
Yeah. No, okay.
I mean, who has their computer on?
No.
I have my computer on.
It's off. Okay.
There went the echo.
Okay. Anyway. No, what was it about the genres? I do, you know, and that's one of the reasons why tonight we'll probably read some, you know, little excerpts, because I think it's really important that people understand that they just say they're not going to read a book because it's a certain genre, but really they're not, they've never read that genre. So I think if they hear it, it might not be something that they say right away, no, I'm not going to read it, because that's what happens a lot.
Well, we all know that there was a certain book with a number in it that brought BDSM into the light, okay?
Yeah.
That was only a few...
Are we talking 50 Shades of Grey? Come on.
Shades here, okay? I read all three of them, okay? I got a little sick
of my...
Yeah, but
it wasn't worth it. Elizabeth Black writes a better book. It's called Don't Call Me Baby.
Probably is
okay.
Better.
She owes me. I did promote it. No, just kidding. No, I seriously, Elizabeth Black's book, Don't Call Me Baby, is a heck of a lot better than all three of the 50 Shades of Grey books.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I really am.
Hey,
you know,
not because I know Elizabeth. I will say this in front of her and behind her. I think, and somebody said to me, he says, which is a, do you like 50 Shades of Grey? I said, yeah, but I... like Don't Call Me Baby more, and I will trumpet it as much as possible. It is that good a book.
All right, then that sounds good, because I need something to read, and I would love to read something else by her. Good.
Elizabeth, and her fairy tales aren't bad. The Trouble in Thigh High Boots is pretty good too. I'm prejudiced.
Well, she's been doing this a long time.
I remember when she was, we don't have to tell about her career, but she's been around for a couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
I met her 20 years ago, okay?
Right.
Really? Thanks. You just never know when it's going to happen, right?
Never.
She was seven at the time, right.
Yeah. Delina, tell us about your new book. I want to talk about Delina's new book, and then Susanna has one. Okay, Delina, tell us about your book.
Well, my book is called Devil's Bitch, and I tell people that it's kind of like The Taming of the Shrew meets 300.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Okay. You've got this really difficult, really, really difficult, stubborn heroine who is pretty set in her ways. She doesn't want to marry. She has no interest in relationships. She just wants to fight. She loves battle. She's in the army, and she's happy. And then, of course, it's you need to sire an heir, and I don't care how you do it. So it comes down to a wager between her and her father.
Right.
And it's, okay, if you win the summer games, you don't have to get married, but you still have to have a baby. But if you lose, you marry the winner. So I kind of based it off of the old story about Atalantis.
Yeah,
she was a really good racer, and there was the three golden apples that Artemis gave Hero to distract her so that he could win the race. That's kind of what I based it on, very, very loosely. And it cracked me up, and I didn't realize just how much I was channeling myself when I wrote it.
Yeah, sometimes you just
don't
know.
Let me ask you, you've used a lot of myth in your book.
I love that.
Yes.
And using myth, I'm amazed at some of the authors. I'm going to mention Elizabeth Black again. She used two fairy tales, Rapunzel and Puss in Boots, to adapt. Another author used another myth or genre and redid it and put it into an adult ideal. How much do you feel you've used that? And, of course, Suzanne, of course, she's using The Legend of Jack the Ripper.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to sound snooty, and this is going to sound so snooty, but unless you've read a lot of the Greek myths, and not just the more popular ones about Hercules or Zeus, who could never keep it in his pants, The more minor ones. You're not going to recognize a lot, but I do have certain themes, like they're my own made-up cultures, but they're based off of Sparta and then Rome during the height of its expansion, so it has a lot of different, like a cultural mishmash going on. And their warriors in Sparta, they were raised in this culture of the individual meant nothing. It was all about, you know, the glory of the nation and the citizenry as a whole. And so you did have a lot of philosophers and a very different outlook than what the movie 300 actually did portray. And you see that a lot in My Hero, because he was very calm, was very philosophical, and he was he had this psychological control over the heroine, and you could see it in that's where my BDSM came in, because it was about the dominant submission, but it wasn't physical at all. It was all very subtle and psychological, and the Spartans actually were masters at that. So I thought it was based a lot on history and then incorporating their myths as well.
Oh, that sounds
that's
really
my
good.
English, yeah, that's my English major coming out, but
yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
my
excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I love history.
Yeah, well, right. So then, you know, you're giving people a different kind of an education. Let's put it that way. Then when you're doing that, it does. You know, you have facts in it, so people are actually learning some things about that. Because you know, a lot of people, you forget all these things. You know, you forget some of the things you had learned, myths, and you know, mythology and things like that. I think that when you do things like that, people then they go, oh, I remember something like that. So what you're saying, I understand what you're saying, because it's further away from people that they won't recognize everything you did.
Exactly.
Like that he's bringing to life an era that we would never experience. So she's bringing us back to ancient Rome and Greece. I think it's great. Love it.
I had a lot of fun writing it. I really did. But, you know, that's how I learned most of my history, was reading books and, you know, watching movies. And I would be like, hey, that's really cool. And then I'd go look it up to see just how much was real. So I didn't learn that much in school.
Right.
Well, I'll go along with that. Come on.
You know, actually, the funny part is sometimes when I'm saying something, I'm thinking like, I guess I learned something. I didn't think I learned anything, you know. And then sometimes something will come out of your mouth and you go like, maybe I did remember something, or it did stick in my brain. And I wasn't just worried about what I was doing on Friday night. That was my big problem. Friday night. What were we going to do on Friday night? Who cared about the week? We just were interested on the weekend. And
he can, so I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was exciting.
Yeah, she did.
Know. Yeah.
I was the only thing out of the house.
Yeah, well, it is fun. You know, I mean, you know, it was fun in those, you know, to think about what you're doing on the weekends and have a good time. But then, you know, I guess you don't realize that you are learning sometimes, but sometimes something will come to you and you remember about what happened in school that may have made some kind of indent somewhere. You know, because sometimes you don't think you remember anything, you know, because it seems so non-related to the world that you're in, some of the things we had to learn, you know, which they're still teaching kids, and God knows why. But I don't know if
I love to say in English, because you can always draw back on things that you read.
Yeah.
The classic history.
Yeah.
Or ending. You can always draw back on it and come up with a scenario.
Yeah, the classics, right. And the classics, you know,
I read all the classics. I was a nerd, okay?
Yeah.
Almost one of my favorites. So, I read them all. Tale of Two Cities, I read them all. You know,
You had to read, though, in school. You had to read
a lot of them you had to read, and it was funny because kids didn't. But I lived so far from a library, and my mother never drove. I read everything they gave me. I mean, a separate piece. Death Be Not Proud.
You know, I was thinking of that. You know what, Death Be Not Proud, you know, just when you said it, because Death Be Not Proud was a movie that they did years later. And that, you know, that's still on the list, I think. There's a lot of books that are still out there that they still use for kids. You know,
make sure. I always say to kids in that age bracket, you need to read these stories.
What about, we tend to forget, and I'm very picky on this one. every year I read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. As dumb as it sounds, it
amuses
my... Every year I read it. That and every other year I either read Don Quixote or... the 1,000-page volume, not this 300-page little cut thing.
Yeah.
I'm talking the 1,000 pages, the whole two parts where Don Quixote comes back as a sick man and then his story is recanted by Sancho and Aldonza, and people are like, who? What? Where?
I haven't even seen it on Broadway, so yeah.
Yeah, on Broadway has nothing to do. Oh God, no.
See, I go by them. I love movies. I've always loved movies. I like old movies, new movies. I just love to watch movies. And for me, that's why I probably screenwriting. That's what I do too, because I love it. You know, and you know, when you look at some of these, you know, and they do make them from books, and you know, some of them. And some are really good, and, you know, you don't really know. And it's all about the box office. So what happens is, you know, if a movie doesn't make it in a week, they get rid of it. And it may have a chance, but they don't give it a chance anymore. So it's got to be a hit right away. And so
if you put Star Wars in the theaters today, I'm not talking about if it had no track record, it would be dead in a week. I mean, there were theaters that had 70-millimeter prints that lines were around the corner and word of mouth. Today, if it doesn't make it in the first or second week on the internet, it's gone.
Yeah.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Star Wars is now such a film because of word of mouth. Now with the internet, and there's more word of mouth, too many people are like, they'll destroy a film before it even gets there. The spoilers are already out on the internet, and the spoilers are hurting everything.
Well,
even erotic thrillers.
Yeah.
Angry Bird brought Star Wars back to life. I have a 6-year-old. She's into Angry Birds. She has watched Star Wars, the first one, the second one, the third one, so many times. She knows Obi-Wan Kenobi. She knows Luke Skywalker. And she even knows Boba Fett. These kids watch, the little ones have watched the original movies. I think it's great.
All three
she watched. She loves the original movie. I says, those are the movies I watched. This is what they were like, you know. Thinks they're great, and I think it's great.
Well, I do think it's good if kids are reading, if they're watching other movies now, because some of the movies that are made right now, I can't even believe they get made. And they get made because the fact that somebody has money to get it made, not because they're really good. In the other days, a studio would have to take them and okay it. And then, you know, sometimes the people that are producers are the actors in it, and sometimes they should have probably gotten other actors, but they have the money and they wanted the part. And that's what happens to a lot of these movies that would have been different had they have a studio behind them, big one with a different actor in it, you know. I mean, it does matter. The acting matters. The directing really matters, you know. That's, to me,
being awful movies, that would...
But what annoys me more about movies these days also is everything is a prequel, sequel, equal, or a number, or a remake, or a remake of a remake of a remake.
It's ridiculous.
I mean,
when we call production companies for Marcus Brand, and when we do, what happens is they'll say, we want a movie like, we want a script like so-and-so, but sometimes you don't know that that movie was going to be successful, but they're looking for something like it, and that doesn't always work, you know, to make a box office, you know. But they want something like whatever is the latest box office. It takes time to do a movie, but they still want certain movies to be a certain way, which is why a lot of people have stopped going to movies, because they don't really like what they... I've heard people all the time, they go, oh, there's nothing to see. But I will see a small movie and love it, but they don't have enough money to PR it, so nobody even knows it's there. And
there is a movie, and if you haven't seen it, Marcia, go see it. It is an excellent little movie. It was produced and written by Emilio Estevez. He is a small bit part in it. Stars
really good.
Deborah Kara Unger and Martin Sheen.
Uh-huh.
And it's about a father, the son dying, going to the El Camino Way, which is a 500-mile trek to the church. And so the son basically passed away going to do this trek. and the father took the trek and discovered his son along the way. It is
a really good movie. He does. He does
But most people haven't seen this movie. If they have, every time I've said to somebody, "You got to see it," I get a letter or an email or a phone call of like, "Damn, that's a good movie," or "I can't find it anywhere,"
it
or whatever.
Is it at the theaters?
No, it was at the theaters about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, but it's on DVD. And if you really want to listen to something interesting, listen to the commentary track with Martin Sheen and Emilia Estevez. But the better thing is to watch it. Just watch it. And if you're not moved, you take out your heart, because it is it's that beautiful. And if you're not moved in some way by it at the end of the movie, just take out your heart, because you don't have one.
Right, because you know what? I still cry at certain movies I've seen five times, and each time I cry, it's always the same part. I go, "I'm not going to cry," but then you do. It's just whatever. It touches you for whatever the reason. Okay, I want to, you know, have everybody read, so I want to have time to do that. Okay, Susanna, do you have something you want to read?
Well, I'm going to read you chapter one from Chains of Lust.
Okay.
After Daw.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, we're ready.
You ready? Knight was confident as he sat in his little dungeon with his latest conquest, fangs dripping with newly ingested blood. His cock was hard and wanting as he eyed the beauty before him. Time to play, and vampires played a deadly game. Too bad his young beauty would never live to see the light of day. Through his eyes he saw another. His vision centered on the red light district in London, which indicated the young woman was a common whore. Why couldn't his vision center on the rich and well-educated females? He shook his head and concentrated on the fresh blood before him. He stood and walked to the chained young woman and ran a finger between her breasts. He had her arms and legs chained to the wall. Soft leather padding cushioned her, but her body was alive with fear and passion. The wounds in her neck dripped blood, beckoning him to drink from her again. Next, he'd unchain her weakened body and lay her out on the table and have sex with her as he gave her the orgasm of a lifetime. Then he'd snap her neck, putting her out of her misery as her human life slipped away. He'd be on the prowl again soon, sending out two of his very best to find new playmates. When he finished this one, he'd take Carrie's handsome plaything and finish him off. Crescent Moon had already drunk her victim dry, throwing the corpse into the Thames, which had become a great depository for a unique species like a vampire. He unbuttoned his white starched shirt and let it fall to the floor. He took his leather flogger and snapped the tethers in the air. He saw the young woman's head snap up, her eyes wide with fear. Awake? Feel these tethers against your skin. Feel the arousal so close to pain. I'll have sex with you senseless, he snapped the flogger again and let it graze her breast. He whipped it through the air again before letting it touch her tender nipples, and this time her screams hit the stoned walls of his dungeon. Night descended on her, his hunger for blood as strong as his hunger for sex. The dungeon was below his manor, and the stone walls were 2 feet thick. Her screams would go unheeded as he drank his fill. Vanessa ran down the cobblestone streets into an alleyway of the red light district of London. What was she thinking? Why had she ventured to the seediest part of London, Soho? Here the houses of ill repute lined the streets, and prostitutes walked indiscreetly. They took their clientele down alleyways and inside doorways, performing their lewd sexual acts. She'd been told to stay away from certain taverns on Broad Street, but she'd been curious, and now she was being chased. Please God, she recited repeatedly as she ran, the breath almost completely out of her. Please, whatever that is. She ran and stopped to glance behind her at the dark figure, then saw another follow as well, blocking her way down the alley. She turned around in panic, realizing they were boxing her in, and she backed against the cold brick of the wall building. She then took in the stink of debris in the alley. This wasn't the place she wanted to end her days. Please, who are you? Let me pass. I really don't belong here, she said, pleading with the two dark figures. One stepped out of the darkness, a beautiful woman dressed in black, and glided toward her. Delightful. Not one of you delicious creatures has ever belonged here, she crooned. Please. Oh, stop, Ripper, please. This is your fate accepted, the beautiful woman said, opening her mouth slowly. Vanessa backed away into the wall as she watched the woman's mouth open, and her huge saliva-drenched fangs emerged. She covered her eyes, trying to blank out the sight. Surely she'd lost her mind. People don't have fangs. They didn't glide across the ground as if they were floating in midair. This had to be an hallucination. She drank too much wine. That could explain her haunting visions. This wasn't happening. Yet she opened her tightly closed eyes. The vision of horror was still there, and ready to pounce. Vanessa cringed as the scene before her abruptly changed. Pisk, Crescent Moon. You know how I feel about eating alone. A deep voice resounded before emerging from the darkness, smiling and displaying larger fangs. Vanessa should have experienced overwhelming fear at seeing him, but instead there was a twinge of desire. When she blinked at his appearance, she realized there were two devastatingly handsome men who emerged from the darkness, and both were clad in black, with hair the color of midnight. The dark woman joined them, and Vanessa was certain she was their next victim. Would she live to see sunrise? Should I go on a little bit, or?
Okay, where's the cigarettes?
No cigarettes in this one. Please, she whispered and sank to her knees. The taller, broader shoulder of the two men walked effortlessly toward her. He knelt, one knee on the dank ground, and used his cold, large hand to grab her face. Vanessa stared into his eyes, so demonic, yet so erotic, her heart almost stopped at the sight of him, because there were no words to describe his utter perfection. He was more than classically good-looking. His cheekbones, aquiline nose, and full, sensuous lips complemented his square jaw. His hair was sleek and thick and jet black. She stared into his eyes, eyes which were dark and ominous, and began falling deep under his evil spell. Her tongue ran over her bottom lip seductively. She wanted this man and had no desire for him to stop his obvious seduction. Okay?
As I said, where's the cigarettes?
None of it, and it's one of my first, has even gotten into a sex scene. It was just, I wanted you to know the fear of this vampire.
Right.
And we do get into it, but it takes a much longer time than normal, because I wanted to write something different.
It's
good. I mean, you know, you're almost as good as Elizabeth Black's stuff. I almost want to get the computer starting to smoke here.
It was one of the ones I had just sat down one day and said, I want gothic. I want to go back in time. I want to bring you into an era, and I want you to feel what it's like to be in it. I mean, we get more into Jack the Ripper, if they do encounter him and everything. And I loved bringing that evil thing into this, because I tell you what I think he is.
Because
they never
right,
found
but...
him.
Let me ask you a question.
Women.
Can I just ask Bennett, I hate to interrupt you, but let me just say something. Does anybody, people in the chat room are saying that they hear classical music. Does anybody?
Yes, somebody else says it too.
Yes. Does anybody hear that?
No.
I don't.
I've been hearing that from two people that have messaged me already.
It was me. I had to turn it off. My cat had got on my desk and was turning on my speakers, and I had something playing in the background, apparently, so I shut that off.
I didn't hear that. Maybe
well, they're hearing classical music. I don't know.
Okay. No, all right. So it's gone then. Is it gone? People in the chat room were asking that. Right, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead, Bennett.
No, what I'm saying is you've given us a little insight, Suzanne, on the writer's mindset. What else brought you the idea of using Jack the Ripper in your book?
That actually is how this all started. He's one of the few legends that I am so interested in. And I said, how can I write? I don't want it to be the main point of the story. I want them to encounter him, and I want me, what I think he was. I don't think he was of this earth. That's me.
because my mind is warped, okay? It is so...
Well, wait a second. I can agree with that. No, okay, now go on.
Okay, thank you. But I don't think, you know, in my mind, he wasn't a vampire, but he was something else. So I kind of give you a little insight to what I thought he was.
Well, I think that probably
and
people do know
him,
him
but even
so
a vampire...
There's been so many stories like that, you know, and not like yours, but what I'm saying is it's a part of history that people keep bringing back, or, you know, in different ways. So
it's
your way.
Yeah, and it's well documented, which is really great, okay, which is wonderful because you can go right into the, you know, right into the history, right into the documentation. You can cite everything, which is, you know, and you're there, okay?
But what annoys me sometimes, and I'm not saying this to Suzanne, but, basically what annoys me a lot of times is people don't know how to play Jack the Ripper. And I don't mean as a film. I'm talking about as in what he really is. What I understand and what I know, you know, the facts are all there, but it's like too many people try to, you know, use the royal connection or do this or do that, and they forget that sometimes Jack the Ripper was an intelligent, creative idea. The intellectual property of Jack the Ripper is fascinating. And most people seem to forget that. And I'm glad you have it, Ms. Ryan.
I think what you've done with that is you've made it your own. You can definitely.
That was a compliment, by the way. Take it. Yeah. I don't give many.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, I actually went into history. Everything that you read, it was all historical facts. The five women that were killed, the areas they were killed in, it's all in here. But that's to bring you to the encounter they have with him. It's short, it's sweet, and it's not the main point of the story, but you do get the feel of what was happening at that time.
Yeah.
Because she's looking for her sister.
And
what happens is she's a young girl who, for some reason, this particular vampire gets enamored of her and helps her look for her sister. She's missing for 3 weeks. And where she winds up is down in the red light district of London, and that's where he's killing all these women. So it ties together.
Yeah,
it
I think very well. All right, now, Delina, do you have something picked out that you...
Oh, gosh, that's a really hard act to follow. My goodness.
I don't know.
All right, well, why don't you... Right,
mine ain't sizzling, so I'm
Bennett,
not worried about
it. Bennett, why don't you go next, then? We'll let Bennett
go next. Want me to go next? You really do, don't you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, but mine is not sizzling. I don't like dirty books. I'm sorry. No, they're not dirty books. They're wonderful books.
No, you make up for it with your dirty mind, Bennett.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, I do have a dirty mind. I do. It's very, very dirty. And so it's like, okay. Basically, this is a column I wrote a few months ago for Night Owl Reviews magazine. This is an issue 41. It's my column, Piece of My Mind, called Career Day. A lovely woman sent me an email asking if I had gone to a child's school to be in a career day. Well, I don't have any kids of my own. However, I did have an experience as a writer in an elementary school career day. Well, let me correct myself slightly. I do not have any children of my own. However, I do have godchildren, or children of close friends. Instead of calling me godfather, I tell them, call me Uncle Bennett. Most of these children now are now grown and grown into young men and women with children of their own. And still they message or phone me, and still they call me Uncle Bennett, a title I treasure and enjoy. Well, my godson, Timothy, don't get me started on Timothy, had a career day when he was in a third grade class. This was a number of years ago, 1990 to be exact. This young man now has children of his own. However, he went to his mother and said, "Uncle, could Uncle Bennett be the adult in the career day? Now he has two great career parents, and he wanted me for some reason." When I got the call from his mother, I said, "Sure. Just tell me where and when," and without a minute's of thought, I booked it on my schedule without a care. In my mind, there was a pride of being asked to a child's school for career day. That morning, I drove him to school. He had two backpacks rather than his normal one. I wondered why, but gave it limited thought on the matter. This Kuride was in his classroom, just like a show-and-tell with adults. The child would go in front of the class and talk to his or her parent about his or her parent member. And then there was a morning session, which is 9 a.m. to noon. And then we'd have lunch together with the child. I sat calmly in the back of the room with five other adults. And there was a noted trial lawyer, a heart surgeon, a bookkeeper for the Redskins, a TV news director, who I'm still good friends with, and a well-known pastry chef. Each child brought their family member up to the chair of honor in front of the room, and the adults sat there with many doe-eyed children staring as the child regaled of this family's member's his or her career path. I was the last adult put through this dog and pony show. Excuse me, I have to move the cursor down. Give me a second. I'm not as fast as this,
I'm
okay?
I'm out. Okay.
Just give me 2 seconds here. Timothy started, "My Uncle Ben is a famous writer." I just smiled and listened. He's written newspaper columns and magazine columns, plays, poems, and a few books. That backpack gnawed in my mind. Why did he bring it up to the front? He went to the backpack and brought it a few magazines and a newspaper, a Washington Entertainment magazine, a Scarlet Street, a Strange New Worlds, one of my Audio World newspaper columns, and Loving Hearts Live Forever. All had my material on it. The newspaper was folded so you could see my photo, and Timothy continued. He's written many things, and he's a noted reviewer and columnist. Uncle Benedy pointed to me and smiled. Has even taken me to advanced screening of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Secret of the Ooze movie and After Party. This got the children riled up and smiled and giddy laughter. You ever get the feeling when you're being set up? I was, and it was by a 10-year-old, no less. Dear sweet Tim looked at me with his loving eyes and then to his classmates. And my Uncle Bennett knows everyone in the entertainment industry. He had his classmates eating out of the palm of his hand. He went back to the backpack and pulled out photos I had given him from conventions and book expos. He knows Ray Bradbury and Hal Clement and Stephen King. And there in color, I was in a picture with King and another, Clement and another, and Bradbury smiling in a third. And what I saw, this impressed many of the adults in the back of the room. However, I was getting the feeling with their stares where daggers were coming out of their eyes, and I was getting uncomfortable in the chair of honor. And then Tim threw the kicker in, and I didn't see it coming. He knows Donatello, Batman, and Spider-Man. The teacher tried to regain over this conversation. Tim, Donatello, Batman, and Spider-Man are not real. Then out of that backpack, he pulled out a picture from the Turtle After Party with Donatello and him and myself. A Batman photo where I shook Batman's hand, in which the picture came from a DC Comics booth at a book expo. And the Spider-Man photo, which was from a comic book convention, where Spidey and I held our webbed hands. A green goo was put on the hands to be webbing. And the teacher could not argue with this photogenic proof. She said in a sarcastic tone, as I had arranged this, "Well, thank you, Uncle Bennett. Why don't you join the other adults in the back of the room?" I had never done a career event before, and the adults greeted me when I sat down in the back room with an air of disdain. I sat back in my chair to gaze off as most of the class was staring at me. The teacher then tried to regain order. "I want you to next to the adult whose career you'd like to do when you grow up." Almost the whole class in mass did a mass exodus in front of my chair. Many of the children wanted to touch me or get an autograph because I'm the one that shook Batman's hand. I could see Tim smiling in the back of the room with his classmates. I didn't know whether to hug him or strangle him. I could see why he didn't want his parents there. At lunch, many kids who were not part of Tim's class pointed at me. Now, fame is a strange bird, especially when the whole third grade class knows who you are.
Oh, that's
scary thought. I had more children that day wanting me to be their friend. A few of the boys asked me if I could get Batman to come to their birthday parties in the following weeks. I said they may have to have one of their parents call the Batcave and see if Batman would be free. And one little girl asked if I knew Spider-Man was single, and I said I think he has a girlfriend. I laugh about it now, but then it wasn't so funny.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Well,
oh.
so much for bring along a parent or with her friend.
Oh,
you know
what adorable.
So if somebody says, hi, bring along your grandparent or your parent or whatever, yeah, I'm not going to go.
See, but that's no, look at it. Adam Sandler
gotta give him
made a whole
credit.
Career. Look at Adam Sandler made a whole career at the beginning of all his little characters that he brought to life because he believed in them.
That's funny. That's
it's,
a great kid.
No, this is all true. That's the problem.
I know. But I was a smart kid. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah,
I know, and I was the victim.
Well, you know what, though? But, you know, but really, you know, I mean, it made for a good day for the kids. Let's put it that way. They seem to have a good
oh,
time.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if these kids are still remember me or not. This is like 20 years ago.
Wow. Yeah,
and
it's
like, oh yeah, Uncle Bennett, right?
Well, Uncle Bennett. Everybody wants the Uncle Bennett. That's what you should name your show now, Uncle Bennett. We'll have that show.
No, thank you. I like Anything Goes. It's a great show. It's on Blog Talk Radio on Friday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
So now that you said that story, don't you think people are going to call you Uncle Bennett? You think that's what they're going to call you?
Hey, I've been called worse.
Oh, that's funny. I love that.
Oh my God.
Hey, you should read it in my column. I talk about this kind of stuff every month in my column, you know. Not just this, but other things. Oh, yeah. Last month I had a lovely column about, you know, Scarlett Johansson is suing somebody. And
really?
because this writer made the character look like Scarlett Johansson. Didn't say her name, but
okay.
Made her look like Scarlett Johansson. So she's suing him in a French court.
Really?
And so I hadn't. So
really?
I'm sorry?
She really is?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, read my column.
I'm
read
going
my column.
To.
It's,
yeah,
go
it's
ahead.
Like, why do people do this? She looks like a lot of people.
Oh, I know that, and you know that. But the thing is that she's suing him for likeness infringement. Now, I had my friend who is a very good attorney named Sarah Koppel, and I wrote the article because I had Sarah give me legal opinion.
Yeah.
And believe me, if Scarlett Johansson wins this suit, which she's doing it in France, not in the U.S., but
okay.
If she's doing it in France and wins the suit, what will happen if, say, somebody says to you, Suzanne, if they say, hey, your Jack the Ripper looks like George Clooney, and George Clooney says, I'm going to sue you.
Exactly.
It's the same point.
Yeah,
and
because
there
could be 1,000 people that look like George Clooney, 2,000, 3,000 people, but he's going to
I understand
out.
That.
Well,
but
I don't see that many people that look like George Clooney in Chicago. I would remember that if I saw people that look like that.
But you know what? I think you guys know what I'm saying.
No, I know.
I know.
Look, you know what? People can sue anybody for anything, you know, whether they win or not, you know. It's kind of, you know.
One day we'll do a show about lawsuits. I have two or three good lawsuit stories.
Okay. Okay, Delina. Okay, now, can
now,
you read now?
Now, Delina, is it safe enough now?
Yeah, I think so. I think so now.
Aw, thank you.
That's right.
Now everybody's laughed. It's all right.
Yeah, right. That's why, okay, you did yours. Okay, now we have Delina. There we go. Okay.
It's a damned pile of steaming horse. She trailed off her cursing, muttering to herself. Beyond the window, streamers of every color fluttered in the salty breeze from the coast. Throngs of people in every shape and color imaginable choked the streets as yet more new arrivals paraded in from ever further corners of the empire. Men strutted, blown up with their own bravado, waved to the cheering crowds, catching garlands and little folded paper luck tokens as they passed. Buskers set up at every street corner, shaking their tambourines and sistrums. They played spittle, pipes, and drums as they sang and laughed. Tumblers and every manner of street performer added to the festival atmosphere. It was just another influx of fools, for the God's sake. Oh, Noria, her cousin sighed behind her. Let them have their fun. The games come but once a year, and it's a holiday for everyone. Only the most necessary work gets done, and you know the city is awake for Naya Week during. Norelia grips the wide windowsill until her knuckles were white. That's during the festival, you oblivious simpleton. She growled in frustration. And that is 10 days away. This is his fault. Of course, by him, she meant her father, who had sent an imperial decree announcing their wager as a contest. Worst of all, instead of the usual banners, there were drawings and banners and even murals of her likeness everywhere. Everywhere! As if I were some goddamned prize. But you are, Velia laughed. When Norelia whirled on her, reaching for a sword at her hip that was not there, Velia laughed harder, though not with malice. You are the prize, Noria. You know it's true. When Norelia didn't stop glaring, Velia made a delicate, vexed sound and fluttered into a lounging chair across the room. You're a legend, darling, and the people love you. You bring nation after nation under our banner, and you stand undefeated. You never married, and it's rumored you had never taken a lover. Because I haven't. Norelia recoiled at the very spot. Velia went on, unperturbed. And now the men of every corner of the empire have the opportunity to claim the strongest and most legendary woman in history. Norelia scowled at the sacrilege. To claim she was more notable than the great and few empresses of Lomir was a gross overstatement. Let them have their 10 days dreaming of glory, Noria. You will defeat the greatest of them. You always do. She laughed again. And even by the grace of the gods you do not. Is it really so bad? She got a disgusting twinkle in her eye. Marriage has so many perks, after all. Norelia grabbed fistfuls of the silk skirts she'd been stuffed into earlier by the servants her father had sent. And her hair was piled in her head in silly coils and tiny braids. It felt strange with her neck bared, no crest from her helmet trailing down her back. No weapons, her father had ordered. She felt naked. I have only to think of my soldiers and their camp followers rutting in the dirt at night, whores hopping from man to man with sticky thighs and fistfuls of copper coins. She had to suppress a shudder. It's disgusting and messy, and the noises? She swallowed against the need to gag. Velia giggled and clapped her hands. Oh, that's the best part, dear. Oh, the noises. She somehow managed to invest the word with a quality that made it seem delicious. It was the way Norelia would talk about a good steak dinner after claiming a battlefield. She shook her head. Nothing's better than a hot bath and a good fresh steak after sticking the opposing army's general's head on a pike. Velia just winked at her. Well, it's not steak, but it's definitely a fine cut of meat. Norelia grimaced. Oh, you're disgusting. She squeezed her eyes shut and grit her teeth. God, she had to win.
Excellent.
Wow.
Yeah, excellent. Very good.
I heard some people snarking during that.
I'm not the one who describes everything.
Okay.
How fun was telling her. Very good.
Very good. Yeah. All right.
I'm smirking, okay?
No, but Bennett, I think I want your opinion on this, because this is why we read now on the shows. Now, why is it that people then say, oh, no, I won't read this genre, I won't read that genre? Maybe if they gave them a chance, they could read them. And maybe they'd be very pleasantly surprised. They'd be surprised how good they are.
You have to understand the term erotic or romance book are the kind of books that they think that they'll find under somebody's bed or laden with, let me find a nice way to say it, men's certain essence or women's certain essence on the volumes. They don't think of them as literature, and that's the problem. They don't. Even though these things are powerful pieces of work, they just think that these are things you keep under the bed, like a Playboy used to be, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
When I was 16, and I say this for a reason, I asked my father for a Playboy. Now, he took an X-Acto knife and took every naked picture, or most of the naked pictures, out of the volume. Okay? And I said, can I see page 27? He says, why? Because the other side's a part of the Playboy interview when I was reading it. Yeah. And that was with Jimmy Carter at that time. Mm-hmm. And he gave it to me, and he made a copy of it and gave it to me, and I put it back in the magazine and read it. He said, and I said to my friends, "Oh, I was reading Playboy," and they're like, "Yeah, right." And I showed it to him. Yes, it had every picture taken out, but you see, that's the stigma that most adult writers, and I say adult writers, not erotic, not romance writers. Adult writers have, because they think it's like that Playboy when you're 16. You know, the air gets out of the room and everything else. And I don't see that at all.
Oh, no.
No.
I know, but I'm just saying that's what a lot of people's mentality is lately.
Well, but that's why we're trying to change it, by having people read on the show, because then people
I understand that, and I agree with
writing.
You. But,
right.
But most of these people... I'm sorry, half these adults look at a genre like this and just take it with, they take it, and I'm trying to find the right words, excuse me for stumbling, they take it as, it's smut, it's porn. And I'm sorry, those words are negative, but that's what most of middle America think of this.
Well, I'm hoping
somebody
it's changing
in Iowa.
Because I'm hoping it's changing. You know,
I hope
it's
changing, but I don't. You have to understand something. We have too many opportunities lately to say an F word or an S word or this, even our normal daily vernacular, vocabulary, whatever you want to call it. And the problem is that the kids, it's F this and S this and whatever that. I'm sorry. When I was a kid, they took a bar of soap to your mouth when you used a word like that.
Yeah, but
now,
you know, everybody, you know, it's commonplace now on the shows. All right, Delana, what do you think about this? How do you feel about this? You know, the genre, what they say, and why it's so tough to get out there. That I'm going to ask.
If you look at the broader concept of just culture, I mean, yeah, in one essence, we're much more open than we ever used to be, but still, it's sexuality and just sex in general is so taboo. I mean, you can have on primetime television people swearing and killing each other and stealing, and yet you can't have people having sex. You know, it's the most natural for, you know, expression and love, and it's all about connecting, and yet that's going to be on your Spice channels, or it's going to be, you know...
Well,
they do have so many
in 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, when Dick Van Dyke's show was on television,
they had to sleep in a double... I Love Lucy.
They had to sleep in a double bed. Okay?
And
one foot... If they got close, they had to have one foot on the floor.
Yeah.
And that was the censor telling them that.
Yeah.
Now... They're in. Thank God, they're now in bed, and even he has his shirt off.
Yeah.
And once in a while, she has her shirt off. You know,
God. They're pretty steamy in some of the, and a lot of the soap operas now. They're pretty, you know, in a lot of the mainstream shows, you know, and, you know, certainly some of the shows that are really popular now that are really good, they have a lot of sex scenes in them.
When they're on cable.
But the ones that are on ABC has a lot of it. Susanna, what do you think about this, about the writing part and how you think this could change, maybe?
Well, 8 o'clock, Vampire Diaries. It's on a Thursday night.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that show pushes it way to limits, and they've got 8 o'clock is the time slot there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
and
but that's on a syndicated network. CW is not like ABC, NBC, and CBS. Even though it does follow FCC rules, they try to skirt them. They have really done a lot more... I'm not saying porn, and please, I'm not trying to fight you, but they have really pushed the boundary. You're right.
They're
halfway to cable, in my opinion.
Yeah, because Scandal and all those shows, you know, and the soap operas, they're very steamy. I mean, they really are. They're very steamy.
At 10 o'clock at night, and still, if somebody does something and they catch them in bed... If it's a guy, they show him top up. If it's a girl, they usually show her neck up or they show her back, and she's not showing anything, but you're showing a back or a three quarter where you don't see any, excuse the word, ladies, breasts.
Yeah.
But you know that, you know, they have a way around it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Did you remember a show called Hill Street Blues?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember Hill Street Blues.
Yeah,
I also remember Civil Wars.
You remember how far they pushed that show?
Yes, I do. I know what you're saying.
And
right?
I also remember how many fines the FCC fined NBC for it.
Yeah, right.
They
yeah.
pushed it. They certainly did. They had a huge following, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
what's
the thing?
Did.
Except for the last two seasons, which flopped.
Yeah, they did.
Well, I just think you know, but I think actually there are some shows on that I've seen that are on regular networks that some of the talk is very sexual, and it's at 7 o'clock at night. So I don't know what's happening. It's changed, and you know, and hopefully it'll change for people that are writing. You know, because in, like I've said this over and over, in best-selling novels all over the place, in murder mysteries, there's sex in it. So I think that's why we're reading them now. I want to do this, especially for this type of an audience, because I would like people to see that the writing is good.
Well,
and
there's a show called Bates Motel. Loosely based on the big Psycho, the prequel.
Yes, yeah.
Now they haven't got to, it's Norman and his mommy.
Yeah.
Norman Bates.
If
people
on?
Don't know what I'm talking about, I'm talking the movie Psycho, and we are talking Norman Bates, the Anthony Perkins character.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it's a prequel of what happened and how Norman was shaped.
Yeah.
Now, it is very sexual, but everything is also very suggestive. The problem is you're doing this on shows like A&E and things like that rather than doing classical programming or something which would fit in that kind of genre. They're going for, dare I say it, the bottom denominator level. Dexter, which is a show on Showtime, it's also on this last season.
Yeah.
Their reruns are on 8 o'clock at night on cable. Now, I'm not trying to say it's not a great show. Please don't misinterpret where I'm going to come right from this. The problem with Dexter is 8 o'clock at night, an 8-year-old can turn on the set unless the parents block the channel and can watch. Oh, yeah, it's a Showtime, sure.
Yeah.
And they can watch Dexter, you know, kill somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know. And they do.
But
this is, you know, our you know, we're saying expose them to literature. And what was it? Somebody said, oh, wow, I'm watching Stephen King's Under the Dome. I said, have you read the book? What book?
They're putting on Under the Dome again, I think, because enough
people.
No,
it's got a second season renewal.
Right, but now they're putting it on right now. I think they're redoing the first season again. I think I heard that today
they've already approved it for a second season.
No, I know that, but they want people to see the first season.
Oh, yeah, they're rerunning it, yes.
Yeah,
and the DVD will be out in October or November. The only problem with that is you try to tell a kid that Under the Dome is a book. Yes, the book is about 1,100 pages, and the kid will go, no thanks.
Is it 11? Oh,
even though
it has
sex scenes in it, it's a great book, it's not considered smut. And the thing is, high school students or even eighth graders are buying some of them are buying the book if they're reading at all.
Yeah. Is it really that?
And this is what bothers me is they're not either. If they're reading, that's great. If they're saying, what's a book? You know, they look at you like, is there a book? Is there, you know, X-Men is a great comic book series, and it's a great movie, but the thing is, it's more violent and more apropos reading it in the original graphic novel, reading it in the original thing, where a lot of it was suggested. In a film, you can't do suggestion. Well, let me rephrase that. In the original Dracula, talking about vampires, the original Dracula, Bela Lugosi, he would look at the woman would look back. He would open his eyes, she would open her eyes. You hear a scream and it goes black. And the next morning she wakes up with two fang marks on her neck. You don't see all what, you know, we our mind is the most sensitive and wonderful tool that we have nowadays. And authors don't use it as much. They have to show everything. And sometimes when I was listening to Susanna's stuff, I love it. But there's suggestiveness and non-suggestiveness. And she does a non-suggestiveness, and you can hear some of the asides that you could put in, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think exactly.
That was a compliment, by the way.
Okay, I think before we get to, I wanted to every, you know, their websites and everything, but I wanted to say, like, next week, Fran will be back August 8th. Actually, it's August 8th at 4 p.m. with Dmitry Potovsky, and that's her show is on Thursdays at 4:00 Eastern. So she'll be back, and she's got a whole lineup till God knows when, December, because she keeps lining people up in December. And we'll have some very different shows coming on. And Virginia will be back soon with her some of her tours. And I'll be here with Elizabeth Black's coming again. And we're going to have different some horror shows. And we're going to have more romance shows. We're going to have children's shows. So it's going to be fun. And there's a lot going on. And Uncle Bennett.
Can I do my plug before you
get away with this? I'm going
to
have to call you Uncle Bennett. Sorry.
Yeah, right, sure. Are you been a good little girl? August 9th, I will have the great Christine Nolfi on my Anything Goes show. And on the 14th, I'll be starting a show called Let's Talk, which has topics. And our first one is science fiction convention stories. So it'll be a lot of fun. Elizabeth Black will be the guest co-host on that show.
It'll be interesting.
See how I run this in together, Marcia.
Yes. What? That was good. No, but yeah, I think that sounds interesting because sci-fi is a market. There's so many people in it, but we don't really discuss it that much, you know.
No. These are going to be the stories, not stories on how they do it. These are convention stories.
Those are the good
ones.
There are a number of them. I know.
And wait till you hear the story, which I will tell because I have witnesses who are going to be on the radio, of the Klingon Admiral and myself.
Okay. All right. Well, this is exciting. Right. So when does that start? When is that starting?
That will be at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard on August 14th.
All right. That's good.
And then our next show will be the 21st at 6:30 p.m., so it'll be a lovely show. And my normal co-host will be Rachel Thompson from Rachel and the OC, so it'll be lovely, and we'll be doing this show almost every week. It'll be great.
It's not on Friday, though. It's another night, right?
No. I will still have Anything Goes on Friday, every Friday.
Okay.
Forever and ever and ever, hallelujah.
Yeah. All right. Delina, what's up for you next, and your website, so people will know who you are.
What's up for me next? Well, Devil's Bitch is out, so now all I'm focusing on is the sequel to my very first work, which was a novelette of Hallowed Fiends and Darkest Fortune. I've got the full length coming out next year. I just got to finish writing it. But you can find everything on my blog, which is theprintedfox.blogspot.com. The printed fox. PrintedFox.
Okay.
Because my last name is Silver Fox. So.
Okay. We got that. All right. That's good. Okay. Susanna, you've got so much going on. I saw your website, your covers, everything is beautiful on there, and you've got a lot of stories, which is interesting. I just want to ask you a question. We didn't talk about short stories. I know you have full length, but I am going to have a story about a show about short stories. I keep saying I'm going to have that, but I really need to do that because I think we've not had one on short stories. So
well,
I'll remember to have you.
Most of mine are short stories, actually.
Right, that's why I'm going to have you. Right. We'll have that. So when I decide to do it, I'll give you a call because, I think we need to talk about that a lot because I think that's a very big market that people – it hasn't really been talked about as much as it probably should be because there's a lot of authors out there that do short stories. So,
and I would love to sit on that show. That would be so much fun.
Okie doke.
I have a girlfriend who has six on her Kindle, 600 short stories. And
you know
we
what?
Talk about...
Okay, right, let me ask you, let me say something. Could you ask her if she wants to come on with you? Because she reads all of them, right?
She reads every one of them,
okay?
In fact, she reads every one of them.
On. Yeah, because I'd like
I
to...
I will have her
one.
Here with me, absolutely.
You know why?
My girlfriend Rose... Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Because I want to know, I want people... that's what we've been looking... I want to hear a reader... opinion on these things, yes, because I think it's important.
Or erotic. That's another thing. She never read erotic romance until I started writing it. And I said to her, Rose, I need an opinion. It was one of my first ones. What do you think of this? And she says, oh, I'd love to read it. She loves romance reading, but she says, they never take it far enough for me.
Okay, all
I
right.
Said, really?
That's good.
I thought reading this. Tell me how. What do you think? That a good friend, a little embarrassing. My first erotic short story, where I used, you know, the terminology that most people don't, and she absolutely loved it. She said, "I can read more of these." I'm like,
"Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
See, that's interesting." And send me her. Send me her email address. I'll send her mine because I want, you know, I would like opinions because I think it's that's what we want to have as readers on because I want to hear what the readers say because that will help people understand that there's so many people that love these stories, the short stories.
Oh, absolutely. And I've had quite a few of my friends who I've let read, you know, one or two stories, and one girl was like, how can you use that word? I'm like, yeah, well, you get used to it after a while. It's like anything else that you're going to do. You ask a brain surgeon, how do you get used to operating on brains? To him, it's all hat because once you've done it a couple of times, like anything else in your life. Me, I love Nora Roberts. I love Beatrice Small, Rosemary Rogers, Jude Devereaux, Stephen King, James Patterson. I can go Robin Cook. I love them all.
Yeah, but do you like Ben and Pomerantz? That's the big question.
I love you.
Thank you.
I love you the most.
No, I think that is definitely because I really we try to get readers on, you know, and a lot of times they don't want to come on. I have a friend also that I wasn't
Andrew
sure.
Dane, she's one of my all-time favorites. I read a lot of what she writes, okay? But one of
Cassie
my favorites...
Cassie can write the phone book, and you know that as well as I do.
Let me tell you, anything at all, and she's amazing at anything she writes. But one
in what, three handles or four handles, and also co-authoring with Christian, so it's like she has a market no other author I've seen lately have it.
We are still waiting to do something together. We have a plan, and we're going to do something together, so we're still waiting. One of these days, I said to her,
Delina, do you have friends that like short stories, too?
I think I'm the only one.
Yeah.
I will tell you something, Marcia. Even though she doesn't write short stories, you need to get Tessa Boynton back on your show.
I am. She couldn't come on. I want to have a show with her. I couldn't because of the time difference.
I understand that she's done my show and I know she's done your show too. But she is a sweetheart. She is great and her new book. Oh, let's say it this way. The computer still has cigarette addictions, okay?
I heard her on your show. Yeah, she was on my show, but she's in London. She's in Greenwich. And
she's
in London
and excellent.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, if you haven't read her books, and I know you have, but I'm saying if you haven't read her books, you people don't know what you're missing yet. And they're short novellas, but they are powerful.
She has Naughty Nights. She's with Naughty Nights.
Yes, she is. That's why. And Gina, we love you, by the way, because I know she listens to all the shows I do.
Yes,
we
do.
Love you,
we
Gina. Don't tell nobody.
We all like you a lot. And we also like Elizabeth, too. So, you know, I have a lot of writers from both publishers because they have gotten a lot of people out there, and that's a good thing, you know.
Yes.
And I think it's a wonderful thing, actually, because, you know, that's a whole other show. But that is a wonderful thing to try to get new authors out there. And with the careers that all of you have, it's huge. I mean, you're all writing a lot, you know.
I will suggest this to you. Have Elizabeth Black read one of her science fictions. I love her cyberpunk science fiction kind of stuff. It is that good.
Yeah,
I am
coming,
that
she's
impressed.
Doing, we're doing a horror show. She's doing. We're doing one sometime in August.
Oh, you are good. Is Trent going to be there?
I don't know. We're going to see about that if he can come. And then I'm doing another one.
If he can come, it would be well worth it. He is.
Yeah.
I think he's the new editor of horror. Like the way Daryl Schweitzer used to be.
I love science fiction. I have a trilogy coming out with Rebel. The
with
first
who?
One's called The Dragon Rebel Ink Press. I wrote three science fiction. They're three in a row, and they're all connected. And the first one's called The Black Dragon. It's a spaceship. So I have three
okay,
science
okay, you're
going
to get me an advanced PDF somehow. I know
think,
you are,
I think
right?
that that's the other thing, which I did forget to mention, that we will be having, I think Nina knows about this, and I think I left a message for her, but I'm going to be talking about this because I'm going to be doing launches for new books and we're going to do a tweet with it. Marnie did it last week with me. It was really a lot of fun for Mary Ting. It was great. We had a great time. Mary did really good. She had a whole day of 8 in the morning till 6 at night. She had a Facebook party going on. And then they were on the show, and then she had her friends. It was really a lot of fun. And then we had Marnie doing the chat tweet, because I'm going to be doing chat tweets at the same time as a show. And it's a really good launch because it's really fun. You know,
okay,
everybody
who
had
brought
a good time.
The cake and cookies?
We didn't have that, but we are all going to be trying to go to the romance convention in New Orleans, because all of us have been talking together for years already, and so we're all going to probably go now. You know, I know a lot of these people for years, but we don't know, you know, we're not in the same city.
Oh, next year we'll all do Book Expo together, walking arm in arm.
I was going to do a show from there last year, but it said not to go, but I thought it would be fun to do a show from there.
Oh, no, no,
which,
no. Go.
Yeah, I know.
It is the best party in the world. I used to go every year, and the one thing I loved about it was I had Wally Amos and Swami Banani, Steve Banani, and I were doing Jackie Mason. We're doing this all for about 20 minutes. And people were watching us, and this is Wally Amos, famous Amos, and Steve Banani, who wrote the column Swami Banani, and I were doing bad old Jewish men.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really fun. I think it's fun that, you know, that we get to meet, you know, I haven't had a lot of people from Chicago on the show, and I don't know why, but I've had a lot of, from a lot of other areas, not Chicago, which is weird. I don't know why. But who knows? I don't know, but I'm going to go to some of these.
Well, no, the people from Chicago moved to Muskellen, Indiana, and places like that.
Well, Delina, she can talk to, Delina can tell us. She knows that.
The reason why is one of my best friends who listens to this show lives in Muskellen, Indiana. Hiya, Max. So he and I have been laughing. It's like, yeah, I say people in Indiana moved to, you know, people who used to live there moved to Muskellen, Indiana or Iowa or whatever. Yeah, so. It happens. People know.
Well, I think it's good. You know, I think it'll be fun to meet, you know, so we'll all be doing that. But anyway, we are going to do these launch parties, and I think it's going to be fun. And maybe two and three people can do it at the same time. It's going to be fun because I think on the day a book comes out, it's really fun because instead of just saying my book came out, it's just going to have you can invite your regular friends, because we had Mary's regular, you know, like her friends, too, and people that read her books. Because I think I'm very interested in hearing what readers say, because I think that's great. Because without readers, none of us have anybody to read their books.
Exactly.
You know, we need this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I want to thank everybody for being on the show. Bennett, thank you very much. Delina. And I will now remember to spell your name properly every time. And Suzanne. And you're always invited back. And if you have things that you want to promote, you know, Gina, Elizabeth, just have people on. And, you know, you're always welcome on the show. And we'll have a good time. And so
thank
we
you.
Will end the show tonight. And anything else, Bennett? Uncle Bennett? You'd like to say anything
else? Thanks. I love you. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to live this down, am I? Anything
no,
Goes
I
will not be on this week. So people that want to come in at 11 o'clock on the 2nd, I won't be there. The 9th, I'll have Christine Nolfi. I want to make sure everybody knows this. And on the 14th, the Let's Talk show will have its first episode. And please just drop by the website, Let's Talk, and I would love to hear from every one of you.
Okay. All right. Thank you all very much.
Thanks.
It's been fun. All right. Everybody can go to sleep because it's an hour later there, Bennett. Not everybody's up till 4 in the morning. like me.
I'm up till 4 in the morning. 3, yes. 4, no.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all. Bye. Bye.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank
Bye.
You, Bennett. Thank you,
Take
Delina.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.